Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hello, welcome everyone. This is Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hi.
Today, we have an amazing episode. We're joined by Shah Jahan Khan, who his name rhymes, yes, and it makes sense because he's a very musical person. We talk about his new podcast, King of the World, his family, living in Pakistan for a minute, and a lot of more interesting things.
And most importantly, we talk about the most eternally clickbait topic, 9/11. So stay tuned.
Who are we? Where do we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pets? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hello, everyone. This is Ethnically Ambiguous. I'm Shireen.
Hello, this is the star of the podcast. I am also Shireen.
Wow, that was a twist I wasn't expecting. That was a twist I wasn't expecting. Thank you. Yeah, it's just me and me today. Just me and me today.
I'm Shanna. I'm a Shireen version of Anna.
That's actually a good name.
Shanna?
Like a, yeah, the, you know how like celebrity couples have like their names mixed up?
That's it's our
like
celebrity name couple for, name? Shanna.
Yeah, exactly.
Or, what was I trying to go with that one?
Shireena? You were genuinely thinking so hard.
Shireena?
You could have said Shannon.
Whoa, guess you can't pop in and make jokes with us.
Sorry,
you
I wasn't
haven't
sure.
been introduced.
What the heck is this? This ghost guest has bits with us. Whoa.
Yeah.
Breaking the fourth wall again.
Breaking the fourth wall again.
I'm just joking. Well, you can join in.
You can join in. And well, because you've heard him already, we're joined by Shah Jahan Khan today on the podcast. Welcome to our show.
Thank you so much for having me and for letting me come up with whatever the fusion of the names is.
Now we're going to continue. And you
yeah,
can
now you can
wait
pitch.
Until we come in.
Feel free to put in your thoughts.
Okay.
I was thinking Shireena.
Shireena. There we
or
go.
Or Rihanna. Yeah, anything with Rihanna.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's yeah. Rihanna.
Mind,
it is. Rihanna.
Mind
it is.
Blown.
There it is.
That's actually pretty great.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Well, how did you get connected with Shah Jahan, Anna?
Taz Ahmed sent me an email.
It was really simple. I just wanted you to say, like, a previous guest of the show.
Oh,
previous
guestie was like, hey, you should check out Shah Jahan. And I was like, yeah, just connect us, man. It's really that simple.
That was easy. Here we are.
It doesn't take much to get me interested if someone like Taz is like, you should check out this person. And I was like,
that's
okay.
Good point.
It's pretty much the same with the two of us. We've been friends for instance, the days of a website called myspace.com.
Oh, wow.
That's a long
friendship.
That's how we first met. Yeah, very long. Yeah.
Wait, what?
Holy shit. Wait, you met over MySpace?
I think so. So we were trying to figure this out. I was in LA a few months ago and we couldn't remember. So she used to write for this blog, Sepia Mutiny, which was kind of one of the first blogs to write about my band back in the day. But I think that it was through the MySpace friendship. I'm almost certain that she was like one of our first, you know, MySpace fans. And then maybe at the time, now I may be dating myself here, but one could connect their personal, you know, have your own like personal profile too. So I'm pretty sure we were friends there too. So
that is, you got to hold on to that. That's you don't get that anymore. That's,
I know. I didn't screenshot it. So
yeah, then it didn't happen.
I have no friends from MySpace, I guess.
I never had a MySpace, actually. That was...
really missing much.
You're so
young.
Well,
I was like the annoying... I was the... No, it's not even that. I was the annoying like alt person that just refused to get in MySpace and was like very high and mighty about it. So it's not that I'm young.
Did you have
Did
you have a live journal?
I had a Zanga.
Zanga was next. Zanga was my next
question. Thank you. And then I eventually just made my own little website. I made my own like... I learned HTML and... that stuff.
Okay, that's pretty badass. Yeah. I did
but
not
before that, it was GeoCities. Remember GeoCities?
That is true. Netscape Navigator. Yeah.
Exactly.
Hell yeah.
So, yeah. You guys can stay on MySpace.
I think MySpace, Zanga, and LiveJournal all taught me how to
read and write very basic HTML.
Same, yeah.
Yeah, as in steal the shit that you liked on other pages and put it on yours. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, but then like customize it. It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Because you had to just figure it out.
Yeah.
And that was huge for me.
Huge. There's like a couple of years in our generation where that was like, huge. I think it's like cross, everyone had that, you know, like everyone just kind of knows a little HTML if you were in that window of like GeoCities, you know?
Huge. Exactly. Like bracket slash, you know, that, then that's kind of the extent of my knowledge. So
super huge for all of us. Okay. Well, I want to talk about you, Shah Jahan, but I also want to talk about why Taz connected us, because you have a new podcast series, Copycat.
This is correct.
And what if that was, I like that with every person who has a podcast. I'm like, oh, obviously. Original. We did it first. We're the first people to ever have a podcast. Okay. But you have a series called King of the World. And will you tell us a little about King of the World?
Sure. So, believe it or not, King of the World is the literal translation of my name. My parents named me.
Oh, that makes sense. Shah. King you're right.
Yes. Shah Jahan. Indeed. The Mughal emperor himself. So, with that sort of as a, you know, from birth, having that kind of pressure and the depression and anxiety that came with trying to live up to that, I figured the only thing that was right to do was eventually, you know, a couple of years before I turned 40, start a podcast. No.
Naturally.
Last year, a buddy of mine started this media company, and we kind of, you know, we sort of grew up in the same Pakistani community here in Boston, and we'd been kind of following each other's careers. I've, you know, been in music in this band, the Kaminas, for almost 16 years now. And towards the end of last year, I kind of had like a day job, which I like wasn't loving. And he was like, hey, would you want to maybe host this show? I'm quitting my job and I'm starting this media company. I don't really know what I'm doing. And I was like, you know what? This sounds like a great idea. Let's just both jump into this thing. And initially he was like, so the show is called King of the World. It is a retrospective look back at like my life over the last 20 years in the context of it having been the 20th anniversary of 9/11. I say that as a caveat because when he first approached me to do the show, I was like, I don't ever want to do anything ever again about 9/11. I don't want to talk about 9/11. I don't want to have to center that whole thing. But we realized that, like, I've had kind of a crazy life. I've been sober for almost 11 years. I've had a pretty, you know, in some ways open and public journey with mental health. I've, you know, lived in Pakistan for a bit. And, you know, my band has also been public in sort of some of the things that we've done, but I had never told, I think, everything out there kind of sequentially in this, like, and the thing that appealed to me, so it's like a narrative style show. It's like, I'm the host. We have some great sound design and stuff happening in it. And like, you know, I interview everybody from like my family, my sisters, to like my high school teachers, to, you know, our friend Taz that we just talked about. She's on it. So it has to be good if Taz is on it. Mm-hmm. Clearly. I did the theme song too. We kind of were hoping that if we could just do one decent episode, we could call it a day, but it's actually like kind of exceeded all of our expectations. And I think it's done, like, it's told this, you know, story, I think, like, in a really, I think, like, a pretty compelling and kind of like super interesting way. And I'm super proud of it. So that's the show. That's why I'm here.
Well, that's awesome. I'm glad that you eventually decided to, I don't know, open up again, I guess you could say, because, I mean, I think podcasting or just like recording your voice does that to you. Like, it kind of feels like therapy at a certain point.
For sure.
It's like, yeah.
Yeah, no, and that's exactly kind of, doing it was an extremely therapy. And I know you guys are the pros, so this is why I came to the source. This is why I came to the source
Thank
of podcasting
you.
To make sure that I was doing it, you know.
The only thing I'm pro at is oversharing, which is not a great thing.
So it's a 7-episode series, you know, episode one is literally the day itself. You know, I was basically, it's a coming of age story too. Like, I was about to turn 18. I was a senior in high school, and we kind of go through the day, what happened, some shitty things that some people said to me the day after, you know, some pretty common stuff that I'm sure a lot of people can relate to. And then we kind of go sequentially, like, you know, over the next 20 years, where my life was at in conjunction with what was going on, you know, nationally here, internationally, and then, you know, politically, and just kind of side by side weave together, like, my personal narrative with, like, with everything else that was going on. And the reason I jumped in there is because the final episode actually is with a Muslim therapist.
Oh, wow.
And we kind of, and you know, the show also, like, I discovered so much stuff that I didn't even know, talking to my own parents, to my sisters, mm-hmm. about how they experienced stuff, about how, you know, I learned things that, like, my parents were proud of me for stuff that I didn't even know. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I've had conversations about this stuff forever, but I'm sure you both know that, like, doing these things in this forum kind of, like, it's a unique way to experience this stuff again, so.
Yeah.
Parents, who needs them? So, okay, so I'm, like, really kind of obsessed with names. Not my own, could give a fuck about my name. But do you know your parents' reasoning for naming you Shah Jahan?
Yeah, my mom actually tells the story, I think, on the first or second episode. Oh. It was, I mean, I wish it was something epic that they wanted to make sure that I was the descendant of the Mughal emperor, Shah Jahan. I mean, that's definitely where the name comes from, but really, my dad came home with a series of names that my mom hated.
Mm.
And basically, one day
she's like, I gotta fix this.
Yeah. So Shah Jahan, so the whole name, by the way, it's Malik Shah Jahan Muhammad, because they got to throw in the prophet of God thing, Khan. So it's the four epic names.
Yeah.
But Shah Jahan itself, like, he came home and he was like, hey, what do you think about that? And my mom was like, I like that. And it's actually, it's quite a rare name, even for, like, South, at least for, you know, in my experience in amongst Pakistanis, Indians, South Asians, whatever, mm-hmm. to actually have the audacity to name your child that is, you know,
yeah.
and king of the world, or some people even translate it as, like, master of the universe. It's
holy,
like, a lot.
Holy shit, man.
It's a lot.
Are you an only child?
I'm the eldest son.
Damn, that's gotta hurt for your
sisters.
Siblings. That's gotta hurt for your siblings.
Yeah. Well, youngest sister, she's also heavily featured in the show. She's actually, one of people's favorite characters. Her name is Noor Jahan, light of the world.
Yes,
and
Noor.
And our joke is that Mariam, the other one in the middle, she just got Mary, mother of Jesus. So she didn't get like a Jahan in there, but, you know.
Yeah.
They tried to capture it.
My parents call them, like, old names. Like, they're old-timey
yeah.
names that... It's like, yeah, you're not going to meet a Shah Jahan on the street now, but who
for
knows?
Some reason that reminded me of being at an AA meeting when I was first getting sober in the town that I grew up in, and this white lady was like, what's your name again? Whatever happened to, like, normal names like John and Steve? Like, she actually said that.
Oh, wow.
She's dumb.
Normal names.
Normal names in your fucking country,
yeah.
you dummy.
Yeah, right.
Can you imagine living in a world where, like, a normal name is, like, Craig or something? Like, what is that sound I just made?
Well, I mean,
don't
you have some normal in
no
there.
Offense. Sorry, Muhammad. Anyone out there called Craig.
Muhammad's
I
pretty
mean, I
normal.
I grew up in that world. My town was white as hell.
Yeah.
So,
wait. Well, okay, let's get
wait,
into
hold
that.
On, hold on. I'm not done. I got more name questions.
Anna was telling a story. I apologize.
I got more name questions
Sorry.
Because this is
yes.
where my interests lie. Shah Jahan, old-timey name. I'm also... You know what? Actually, it's a bit of a long tangent. Never mind. I know Shireen's going to
sure?
kill me if I go on this
tangent.
I'm not
going to kill
so
you. You do whatever you
let's
want.
Let's just
do
go.
You, can, you sense, the length of your tangents before you go into them? That's a good skill to have, actually.
It's just like a whole old-timey name discussion. Specifically, my parents avoided doing that for their own personal reasons because they have
yeah.
really, really old-timey names that they're
oh.
like, Jesus fucking Christ. So they both
yeah,
have
yeah,
like
yeah.
nicknames that they go with because they were like, yeah, even when we were born, people were like, well, that's an old name in like the 40s or whatever. So like, it's so old that they were like, yeah, even we at the time in the 40s were like, people were like, why would you name them such an old-timey name? So now it's even like, they're like, those are some ancient-ass
yeah.
names you got there.
Yeah.
My parents are like, yeah, we know.
Oh, hell yeah.
So I'm like, all my siblings have very, very basic names. Purposely, because
okay.
my parents are like, literally four letters. Like, they wouldn't go more than four letters because they were like, we can't put people through this.
I gotta respect
no,
that.
No, and seriously, I mean, Shah Jahan, it's one of those things that even the aunties and uncles, if you, you know, they'll be like, okay.
It's
right.
so, it is like,
Yeah, it's a lot, as I said earlier.
But I think it's cool.
I think it's pretty cool. Yeah, I think it's
yeah.
pretty cool.
Do you have a nickname or anything?
So another thing that I talk about a lot in the show, so, you know, it also deals with identity and a lot of different stuff. So growing up, I had the nickname that the white kids called me was Saj, you know,
okay.
and part mm-hmm. of the, I talk a lot about just kind of, you know, living the dual life stuff that I'm sure that,
yeah.
you know, I don't have to explain to both of you.
Saj, I like that.
But yeah, Saj, but like my friends would call and be like, hey, is Saj home? And my dad would be like, yes, Shah Jahan is upstairs. the name that I toiled, you know, and gave to him, please call him that. And he would get super frustrated. And, you know, it's funny because, like, and me and my sister, Noor Jahan, we actually have a little kind of back and forth in one of the episodes where we're talking about names. I actually discover something that I didn't know about her in terms of her nickname situation, and kind of like when I stopped having to create that separation between the two, and not because for me it was like Saj during the week, Shah Jahan on the weekends, and not being able to kind of, you know, put those two together.
Saj on the weekends, Shah Jahan with the parents during the week when I have to be at home.
No, it's real though. It's that double life. Life is pretty real, but it's also it makes it different when you literally have another name for your double life. You know what I mean?
True.
Like I have the same name with a different accent, but I don't know if it's the same thing. Everyone listening, go listen to the series so you understand more what Shah Jahan's talking about and what's the thing that you learned from your sister. I'm going to have to go listen as soon as possible. What a cliffhanger.
I know you're all on the edge of your seats.
It's okay. Let's rewind a little bit.
Sure.
I know you share so much of your story on your podcast, King of the World, but just in case people don't know, where were you born and raised?
Sure. So I was born in Boston, Massachusetts, and I grew up in an extremely boring suburb called Boxborough with a B. It is at the intersection of Route 2 and 495 North. It's very close to like historic colonial America, like Lexington and Concord, and where those, you know, battles and shit took place. So my dad came to Boston in the 70s to study at MIT. He had gotten, so my parents are both from Pakistan. My father's actually from Balochistan, so Quetta, which is on the Iranian and Afghani border. And my mom is from Lahore, which is on the Punjab side. And they were, it was decided that they were going to get married in 1979 by their parents. So yeah, the first place they lived was Boston and then Cambridge. And then the first couple of years, you know, we were in an apartment in the city. And Boston's kind of one of those places where in the same way, like I'm in New York right now, right? So there's like enclaves, there's like a Chinatown, there's like a Little Italy or something. So the Pakistanis in Boston didn't do that. You know, there's no like Little Pakistan type deal in Boston. So they kind of settled in the outlying suburbs. So a lot of families would be in like different towns and stuff. So, but yeah, it was basically the schools and education that brought them there. And yeah, my mom talks a lot about just the pressures of being the only brown family in the town at the time. And
were you guys near Brockton? Brockton, famously Jamie Loftus's hometown.
Who's hometown?
That doesn't matter, but go.
So Brockton's actually a little bit, it's further south. It's not, it's actually a little closer to where I live now. I live on the east side near the airport, like on the coast.
Near Rhode Island?
About an hour north of Rhode Island, but I'm in Rhode Island all the time. I'm in Providence all the time. I actually started playing in a band there recently. I'm actually doing a gig there on New Year's Eve. But
near Little Compton, Rhode Island?
Well, Providence.
It's near.
I don't know.
I was just looking on a map.
I was in that area recently. That's just why I was asking.
Okay. I gotcha.
Been to Providence, been to Boston, the airport. And just we have a friend of a pod.
The fucking airport, dude?
Friend of the pod is from Brockton, so it's just curious.
Okay.
But interesting. Nice. Okay. Providence, great. Little cute little town, huh?
Yeah.
Little Whole Foods there. I've seen the Whole Foods.
There's a Whole Foods. There's a bunch of shit there.
It's pretty nice. So. Cute.
It is.
Newport, though. Oh, Newport. My God. Jesus Christ. White trash. Okay, I shouldn't say that. That's not white trash, but it's like drunk white heaven. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Everyone is so drunk there.
I played a couple of gigs this summer at this bar on the beach there.
Sounds right.
Called the Ocean Mist, where there may have been a lot of the types of folk that you were just referring to.
Oh, my God. Yeah. So drunk. So white.
So drunk.
I went there for 1 minute and it was, I've seen maybe 4,000 drunk people in like 2 seconds I was there.
Yeah, well, it's nothing compared to a fucking Red Sox game, dude.
Oh, I would never.
So I hate sports. So yeah.
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
I would die.
How did you get into music?
My father, to be perfectly honest. Oh, I mean, he's a, you know, he doesn't play, but he's a huge music fan. So growing up with like Qawwali and stuff. And a lot of, obviously, like, you know, classical Indian and Pakistani music, but also like Johnny Cash and Chuck Berry and his personal favorite, Kenny Rogers.
Why are you laughing? Okay.
And Willie Nelson. My dad's a huge Willie Nelson fan.
Oh, nice.
So, but yeah, my dad, you know, definitely like long drives and the same cassette tapes over and over again. And yeah, my parents put me in piano when I was super young, you know, trying to do that model minority thing.
Yeah.
Be the good piano player, try to match my Taiwanese course. Buddy, Chris Lee, the other non-white person in my class. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So, and then from piano, basically, I did it for quite a while, but then I secretly kind of, not so secretly, but I just wanted to play guitar because I thought guitar was like cooler.
Of course.
And so I dropped out of piano, much to the chagrin of the parents. Mm. But then, you know, I started getting good at guitar and stuff. So nice. That's kind of how it happened.
Before I get too caught up, let's take our first break. And sure. We'll be right back. And we're back. When did you get into like being in bands and stuff? And what did your parents think?
The first band was in high school. It was called Protocol. It was a basically Weezer, Incubus, and Tool cover band, okay, as one would have in the suburbs. After that, I dropped out of college a bunch. A lot of like addiction stuff started pretty early on towards the end of high school. I go into a little bit in the show. But I found myself kind of like back home, I think around 2003 or four, and I ran into an old buddy of mine, this guy, Basim Osmani, and at UMass Lowell, we both were kind of like back at home with our parents and stuff. And he had been in like a goth rock band called Malice in Leatherland, which is, I think, damn, a pretty amazing title.
That's sick, yeah.
Yeah, it's, you know, he had a huge mohawk and stuff. And I was like Stoner, Jimi Hendrix, you know, mm-hmm, slash whatever kid. And so he had this idea for starting some kind of musical project related to, you know, our like brownness, our identity, but also just like other random kind of goofy shit. And so this is around 2004 when I would argue that this stuff was still pretty unusual. And so we made a MySpace page, as we talked about MySpace earlier. And, you know, we wrote some songs which got all this media attention right away because, you know, the white media likes to mm-hmm seize on shit like that. So we had a song called Sharia Law in the USA, which was kind of our response to Sex Pistols, Anarchy in the UK, that kind of stuff. There's also an episode of my show, King of the World, which delves into the kind of orientalization of the media stuff right away and kind of how... It was, you know, it was crazy at first. We got all this attention and then we were like, wait, we're getting all this attention for all the wrong reasons. Kind of standard band stuff, but amplified into like being brown guys in the media when it mm-hmm was kind of, you know, being part of, I would say that one of the first waves. I don't know if it was like, I don't know when the waves officially started or whatever. But yeah, so that's kind of how the band, the Kaminas, started. And, you know, ups and downs, like we've been together almost, this will be year 17 or 18, I've lost count. It's kind of crazy. We're all cool, still mm-hmm friends and, you know, still doing the thing.
It's incredible. It's like a long relationship. Very.
It is exactly what it is. Yeah. It is a intimate relationship with three mm-hmm of your, you know, closest friends. You spend a lot of time together, usually in a van or a rental car. Mm-hmm. And no, we've been really lucky to kind of tour all over the world and stuff and meet amazing people like Taz. And, you know, and I think also for a band like ours, it was an exercise in community building, you know, and kind of finding the other sorts of weirdos like us, you know. I think stuff that it's really cool to see now that it's like just kind of more, there's more of the shit out there.
Yeah. So when you guys first started it, you're right. There wasn't anyone that you could look at being like, I'm going to do what they do. You know what
there
I mean?
There was so. Tony Kanal from No Doubt. He was the brown guy.
Oh, yeah.
There was the dude from Sum 41.
I guess I'm just, you know, I'm saying like group-wise.
Also maybe, no, like,
I'm saying that's probably it. Like there was
Yeah, I thought you were like actually.
No. It was literally just like a few people.
Yeah. You know? A sprinkle. So
yeah.
What about the guy from System of a Down?
Surge, yeah.
Armenians.
Yeah, but, you know, yeah. Pretty hell cool. Yeah. I saw System of a Down when that song Chop Suey like was first coming out. Mm-hmm. So it was
that was
wild,
crazy. That was the first stuff. Time I was like, why do they look brown?
Well, that's the thing. So we were talking about this. Like, it was a time where you literally were so excited to see something even remotely like you
mm-hmm.
that you kind of clung to it for dear life. Whereas now, you don't have to like everything, you know, and it's mm-hmm. like there's so much more shit out there. But at that time, and where, yeah, we were like clinging on to shit.
Yeah, I thought System of a Down was like perfectly encapsulating all my like anger and like animosity towards, I mean, mm-hmm. every aspect of my life growing up. And then also it was like, one guy could be brown, you know, like yeah. it was just that me holding on to something like, I don't even 100% know, because really at the time there wasn't a ton of, like, I wasn't Googling really, you know, I didn't even yeah. think yeah. to Google because I was just like a young kid. And so I was like, yeah. oh, yes. and exactly. I do want to say, did you watch We Are Lady Parts at all?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Yes, yes,
absolutely. That scene, I want to bring that up. Yeah.
When they're in the car and they're like singing along to System of the Down, I was like, there you go. Nailed it.
I only saw the first episode. So I didn't get to catch the rest of the
series. Are you even now, really proud? I would have just lost my shit.
It's an amazing show.
No, the creator of the show is an old friend of the band. They definitely like gave us some shout outs and stuff. Like they have a song in there that is related to a song that we wrote and stuff. So it's just really cool to see.
I mean, they're living out my childhood dream of like being rock stars and not caring and like being tattooed on stage and everything. It's like,
oh, hell yeah.
It's possible, you know, in the show, you know, I'm sure if I was younger and saw it. Yeah.
I actually, when you said the Sharia Law song, it did make me think immediately of We Are Lady Parts. Because I feel like they have a song about Sharia Law, and then they also have like Bashir with the good beard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like they have a, I think they have a, honor they have a song. Killing. So we actually wrote a song called No One's Gonna Honor Kill My Baby But Me, like about five years ago or something like that. So yeah.
That's awesome.
That's so funny to me. Anyway, if you're out there and you haven't watched the show, please go watch it. I know it's like a weird platform it's on. You have to like subscribe or something. But
it's Peacock.
Just torrent it or something. It's Peacock.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Okay, whoa. Allegedly torrent.
Allegedly.
Get caught up.
I'm sorry.
Do people still torrent?
I don't know. It's been so long. Okay. And I'm so rich, so I can afford every subscription to everything. So I really can't comment. Yeah, Shahjahan, please go watch We Are Lady Parts. You would enjoy it so much. Yes. Also, I will watch
the rest of the series.
Ask your friend if you ever just casually run into them what the goddamn music budget was. Because they are...
Yes.
It was incredible the amount of music they were using that was like so mainstream of an era from like Radiohead, whatever, System of the Down. Like I was like really impressed with their use of music. I mean, outside of being obviously a show about a rock band. But like...
Right.
I was like, Creep can't be cheap.
Yeah.
I can't imagine I Creep's cheap.
No.
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah.
So anyway.
That was a really cool part of the show. You're right.
And I will follow up. So just let me know. I will follow up. It's a threat.
What do your parents think of your band? Do they go to your shows?
Yeah, they do. My dad is actually the star of one of our music videos, which is called Disco Uncle.
I love that.
It's a song about this cool punk rock uncle, and the video is pretty amazing, and it's starring my dad.
And I gotta look that up.
If you do one thing, watch that video. It's super cute. We got him like a punk jacket. He helps us like spray paint stuff.
Oh my God,
and,
I gotta go watch that.
I love dad content.
Totally, especially you know,
brown dad content.
Exactly. Yes. So yeah, it's just we've broken down on the side of the road, and he comes to pick us up and show us how to basically be a real punk. So that's what the video is about.
I love that. If you don't mind, I know you probably talk about it more on your show, but what was your experience with addiction and like coming out of that and everything?
As I mentioned, I'm about to celebrate 11 years in January.
Yeah, that's amazing. Congrats.
Thank you. It was a long road. So basically for me, I say this kind of intentionally, it was mainly cannabis. And I deal with that a lot. And I'm one of these people that like, look, it was my thing. I'm not somebody that's like clean, sober now that is like, you have to do what I did or that judges people in any way. For me, I was somebody that was already, for whatever reason, I think predisposed to depression and anxiety and stuff. And cannabis for me became a place that I just hid, you know, and it actually kind of took over my life. And it was kind of all I was able to do towards the end of it. And it sort of happened pretty quickly for me, like right away, it kind of became a different person with it in high school and stuff. And a couple of my high school friends are on the show as well, and they talk about it a bit. I grew up in this very safe quote unquote safe town where you just, it seemed like everything would work itself out. And so once I left, you know, it was really hard. The first couple attempts at college, you know, just like trying to do like whatever the normal thing and like meet people, make friends and stuff. And I just seemed like I was getting super antisocial and all this. I do go into some pretty heavy mental health stuff, including like a suicide attempt that I had. So around the time I was 19 was when I probably first started to really try to like do something about it. But it really wasn't until I was 27 when mm-hmm. I was finally able to kind of hop in with both feet and do the deal. You know, I did 12-step stuff for a long time. I had a sponsor. I, you know, went to tons of different kinds of meetings and stuff. And, you know, then a few years down the line, I got more into like therapy and meditation. And so I've had, I'm super open about it. And I think that it's been cool to like be somebody that if people want to talk to about that, I've kind of become, I sort of make this joke, but sometimes now like aunties and uncles in the community will be like, hey, so I think my kid might be like a dealer or something. Can he like talk to you? And most likely the kid is literally just like smoking, you know, like mm-hmm. was caught one time. But I'll be like, look, you can give them my number. If they want to talk to me, they can call me. But, you know, they probably don't want to talk to somebody that like their parents told them to talk to. But yeah, so it's I'm you know, and I joke about kind of heavy stuff a lot. But yeah, so it's definitely a big part of who I am. But no, I've been able to do. You know, there was a time when I thought that my music career was kind of over, but I was getting sober and stuff. I didn't think I would do it again. But since then, you know, since that time, you know, I've gone on tours. I do everything.
Drugs are hard, man. Mm-hmm.
They are. Yeah. Yeah. I got lucky. Yeah. I was in a lot of situations where, and I did dabble in like cocaine and some other stuff. I also spent a year in Pakistan. So there's a lot of like hash and mm-hmm. opium and often heroin mixed into stuff. But I never... For one reason, you know, and look, it was like the support of my parents, you know, from day one, even though it was very hard to talk about at first, especially in like, you know, South Asian Muslim family. Yeah. It wasn't, you know, now putting out this story out there so publicly, I think it's sort of a testament to kind of like our family and kind of the things that we've like gone through together. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't be anywhere without them and their support.
Yeah, I remember this is how my parents would deal with it. My dad would be like, well, you're already dead. That's how I'm going to treat you. If you're going to do drugs, and you're already dead. And I'd be like, oh, this isn't helping necessarily, but I get what you mean, kind of.
Yeah.
We'll see if it helps.
There was like two things. My dad was like, don't ride motorcycles and don't smoke. So I still haven't ridden a motorcycle, but I definitely did smoke.
Yeah, so, 50-50.
Yeah, why not? That mine's was don't smoke and don't get tattoos. I did them both, baby.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
But they don't seem to care about the tattoos at all. Now they're just like, that's funny.
I found out not too long ago that my grandfather had a tattoo. And it's just like a thing that, you know, people,
no
not everybody knew.
No one's talked about. Yeah.
Yeah. He's also like the opening scene, if you will, of the podcast is a story about my maternal grandfather, my Nana. And just he was this amazing guy. He was literally the mayor of Lahore in Pakistan in 1955. Wow. And it opens with the band. We had a documentary come out about us like about 11 years ago. And there's a scene in there where I'm supposed to give this interview about him. And I'm in the courthouse, but I'm like kind of fucked up and high. And I have this like breakdown. So, but point being like, yeah, my Nana had a tattoo and he was, he was kind of a badass. And he smoked. He rode around with a hookah from what I heard.
I think smoking is pretty normal.
Have you heard that thing where they say like it skips generations, like the kind of person you are, like who influences you? Like it sounds like, you know, like he sounds like a pretty cool guy, but badass. That was like atypical against the grain. And then you did the same thing. So that's pretty
cool.
It's
funny to hear you say that actually, because the first episode is about how I felt like I had sort of failed him, you know? Mm-hmm. And the thing that I realized kind of over the years, and honestly, even like finishing the show, was that I think he would actually be proud of me, you know, because we do.
I think so too, yeah.
Yeah, the maternal thing, we do definitely look like, I definitely have the hairline or lack thereof.
Wow, I love that. When and why did you live in Pakistan?
So in 2008, I was actually doing not that great, like mentally here in the States. We were just about to release our first album. We'd been on a couple of tours. We'd started filming this documentary, Taqwa Core, The Birth of Punk Islam. But like I was basically like not doing well. My bandmate was kind of like, dude, what are we doing? I just got this job offer to be a journalist in Pakistan, so I'm going to go there. And then he, you know, a year or so later, I kind of was still bumming around at home. And he was like, dude, why don't you just like move out here with me? And we'll try to start some kind of musical thing out here in Pakistan. We'll try to do some like Punjabi punk music. So that's kind of what brought me out there. It was my best friend kind of being like, let's just have an experience together. And, you know, it was amazing. It was tough because I was kind of still in the throes of, you know, struggling with addiction stuff. But I played as a session musician with a lot of different bands. I worked in the news media. I had like a radio show. I would play like my like indie punk music on Saturday mornings on their like, and it was one of those places that like, I'm not sure where both of you guys are from, being like an English speaker just gave me so much access and privilege just by virtue of that fact that, you know, I didn't have to have a degree. I didn't, you know, I literally walked in and got jobs. So I was very cognizant of that stuff. But yeah, it was amazing. It was, leaving was tough because I had a pretty bad kind of like relapse while I was there. Oh. About 10 years later, I did go back with my mom and stuff and realized that I had built a relationship with the country that was kind of my own, even through that struggle. So that now I can go and kind of like do my own thing in addition to like see family and stuff too. And in a way, I feel like as the first generation, kind of we are straddling the whole like how much of, you know, that do we keep? How much do we let go and that kind of thing? And for me, I've realized a little bit later that like, yeah, actually I can be both and have my feet in both worlds. And it's kind of cool.
That is interesting. So you relapsed before you left Pakistan?
So I got sober for a bit. Uh-huh. I started kind of going to meetings for a few years off and on before that. I got there kind of with the goal that like, all right, it's one thing that they call sometimes in recovery communities, like the geographical cure. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, you're going to put yourself in a new place and everything will just magically fix itself. And I'm not saying that doesn't work for some people, but another kind of saying sometimes you will hear is like, you always bring yourself with you wherever you go. Mm-hmm. So you can kind of only hide from stuff for a little bit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So yeah, it was about a couple of months into it. I kind of, I snuck in a couple of joints or whatever.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's so normalized too that like you don't really think that you can be addicted to something so normal, you know, and then it affects you in a different way than it does other people. And you're just like, this isn't normal.
Totally. And it's also like, for me, at least it was like, okay, look, at least I'm here. I'm with friends, you know, like maybe I can manage it, you know, but yeah. And that's, but before I, you know, for me, it's just never been a thing I've been able to do.
Well, I'm really grateful that you've been in recovery, and 11 years is a really incredible amount of time. You should be proud of yourself.
Thank you. The 1 year mark is a big one. The 5 year, 10, I feel like is a really kind of milestone sort of thing. Cause that's a real deal. That's the one that when you're like first getting sober, you're like, you know, like no one really fucking stops for that long. Like you're telling me you didn't fucking, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Like, so, I don't believe it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
let's take our second break and we will be right back.
We're back with Shah Jahan. So you find music. You choose not to watch We Are Lady Parts. I won't ever get rid of that. And then, okay.
No, I watched the first episode.
I subscribed
to the free one.
You didn't.
To the free one. And I couldn't watch the rest of them because I didn't want to pay for the subscription.
Call me later. I'll give you my info.
Okay. All right.
So, just lost my mind. I'll never forgive you for that. Even though we just technically met in over Zoom. Okay. But moving forward, we'll see how we are able to move forward, guys. And that is
doing called great. This is why you're the pros. This is why you're the pros. This is why I came to you.
Podcasting.
King of the world, whatever. Okay. Yeah. Forget that even exists.
Well, podcasting is kind of all about clinging on to one thing your guest said that irritated you to a point of anger and then continuously bringing it up until they leave the Zoom.
And that's the way the episode ends.
That's what we've been doing wrong this whole time.
The episode ends with me terrorizing you
over
We Are Lady Parts.
I'm going to call all 15 guests back and be like, hey, can we just do anything more?
And you can't hang up until they leave. Like, they have to be the ones.
They have to leave first.
You have to bother them so much that they're fuck this.
With my mom.
Oh, no.
That's not hard. My mom is so quick to be like, all right, I have to go. And I'm like, okay, I literally just got you on the line. And she's like, bye.
I can hear her check out so fast.
She's like, she's a smooth criminal.
Whenever I start talking about something that she doesn't get, I can just hear my mom being like, mm-hmm. Anyway, I have to get dinner ready. And I'm just like, mama, I'm trying to tell you about my life.
Yeah, she's like, oh, God, Shireen, and all of you, get a life. Bye. Yeah. Okay, so I want to go back a little. I know, you know, here's the thing. I don't want to talk too much because I want everyone to just go listen to your podcast. But then I also just have personal questions. Where were you when 9/11 happened? Sorry to ask the most obvious question.
No,
in the
world. It's fine. I'll allow it. I was sitting in calculus class, which I did not belong in, by the way.
Okay.
Me either.
Acton Boxborough Regional High School. I was sitting there. Just whatever, another, you know, fucking Tuesday morning, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just a classmate kind of ran in and, you know, at the time there was like one TV. So she was like, you got to turn that on. And then, so I was there also like, you know, and then we kind of all ran down to the library and we're watching the one TV that was there. It was actually really amazing to get one of my old teachers on the show, who said, you know, one of the lines that really sticks with me was that, you know, until COVID, it was the most traumatic experience of my entire career. And just the CNN website was down. So in the teacher's lounge, they had like the radio on to try to figure out like what the hell was going on. Also, I had family visiting from Pakistan. I had an aunt and two cousins. So we got back home and, you know, everybody's watching the TV. I found out also while I was interviewing them that like, they actually had planned to go to New York that day.
Holy shit. Like,
they just delayed it for some reason. This was their first trip to the U.S.
Mm. Yeah.
My cousin says it too. She's like, I think that would have been the first place we were going to go. So all this crazy shit. And then a big thing is that the very next day, these three kids kind of just cornered me. And one of them goes, what did your people do?
Okay. Yeah. That's
curious. The big thing.
Yeah. What your town was like after that. Like what the energy was like.
It was different, you know. And we also, there were two people from our town who were actually on the very first plane to hit the first tower. So that added a whole other layer of like, you know, insanity
grief
to the whole thing. Yeah. As I say also in the thing, like then that made it sort of a local tragedy as well as a national one. But yeah, I mean, look, my town was pretty white, you know, my mom talks about this in the thing too, that, you know, she tried to, after those kids said that thing to me, like I told my parents. So this other thing happened where my mind kind of goes blank after that. I think for a lot of us at that time, things are kind of a blur.
Mm-hmm.
But I found out all this other stuff that I didn't know, you know, that of some other things that happened to me that week, which my parents told me, I still don't remember that they happened. Like I'm taking their word for it.
Yeah.
But like the school didn't like do anything about it really.
Yeah.
Now, the flip side to that is I was, because of this podcast, I was invited last week to go talk to my old middle school students they're currently doing a unit on Islamophobia, which blows my mind.
Yeah, and, totally. What the hell?
And it's like the town has diversified quite a bit. Yeah, one of my old teachers like messaged me on Facebook after the podcast came out. We had some press and stuff, and part of the reaction that we've had from people is it's like, obviously, look, we made the story for maybe people we thought would kind of get it type deal. Mm-hmm. But what we did not anticipate was like, it's appealing to everybody, like everybody you could possibly imagine. And it's become curriculum for like schools already and colleges and stuff. And like there I was like on stage at my old middle school, like talking about all this stuff. Like, so just things have changed a lot, I think, in the last 20 years, which is kind of wild.
That's incredible that it's like that your podcast is utilized that way. That must feel very fulfilling and purposeful.
Yeah, I'm going to be the Tony Robbins of Islamophobia or whatever. So
I mean, but like, so me and Anna were in middle school when 9/11 happened.
I was in sixth grade.
We're on the West Coast. So I learned before going to school. So there was this like tense thing in the air. I didn't even consider the fact that you'd be in class, you know, because my brain is just like so into my own experience. I was 10 or 11, but being a teenager and like coming of age and almost being 18 and having that happen is a completely different experience. It's like you're fully formed as like a, not fully, but you know what I mean? Like you're able to like understand the nuances of what people are doing more. And I could only, like, of course it affected you for your entire life, you know, because that's like a very formative time.
Totally. And that's the premise. And that's actually why I agreed to do the show, because we realized that like, whether I liked it or not, this thing defined the rest of my fucking life, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's, so you're saying you were 10 or 11. So my youngest sister, Noorjahan, she was the same at the time. She tells a really interesting story of her. So she was the kid that sort of said that shit to me the next day. His, and I didn't know this until she told me, like on the podcast, his brother was in her grade. And she didn't really understand anything that was going on, but she like learned that this, and the brother was like this like star football player or something who happened to have some kind of like neo-Nazi tattoo on him or whatever.
Oh my God.
And also to already be somebody who, number one, as a, you know, about to turn 18, unsure about where my life is going, which a lot of people in high school are, having this added thing of like this weed thing that was already pretty full blown by then. Also just like the, yeah, also the like not having the like cultural identity stuff kind of figured out yet either. So all of these things kind of going at the same time. It was, you know, and it's not like, it honestly wasn't until the therapist that we talked to in the final episode. Now, I'm not saying that I didn't know. I'm not saying that. Just hear me out with what I'm about to say. Like, I didn't realize that other way in which 9/11 was a traumatic event for me. Like, I didn't use that terminology until she was like, oh, you forgot about some shit that happened to you type deal. So for those, you know what I mean? Like, so for those reasons, even I just turned 38 and it wasn't until I like put all of this stuff together, started writing it out. And honestly, we would write each script, you know, do a bunch of drafts. And by the time we recorded it, it was like draft 9. But every time it would be like just, you know, me in my own closet with this microphone with, you know, lights off and stuff and just reading it out loud and you know, reliving it, but almost like rewiring
processing
stuff. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Having all those things happen at the same time. And also, I mean, I didn't know what the hell I was going to do with my life when I was 17 or 18. Like, you're just so confused.
I arguably still don't. I mean, I'm doing many same. Different things. So, but
No, I agree.
I remember 9/11. I had just finished my flight lesson and I was like, we're on? Just joking.
Oh my God.
I'm sorry. Look, guys, it's not like it's too soon. Let's be real. If there's any group of people who can make a few jokes, okay?
I mean, hello.
It's not like I didn't literally watch people yell at my brother in the streets. Give me a break. Let me, you know what? I'll say it now. Yeah. My mom did take flight lessons years before this shit happened. And then after that, she's like, we should make sure my records are taking flight lessons. Like, that's a thing my mom thought at some point after 9/11.
Hell
like, ooh, damn, is my past interest in flying airplanes about to get me in trouble? So,
holy shit. Yeah.
Could you imagine? Damn. I was 11. I had just finished my flight lessons.
No, I mean, but that's the thing. Like,
we're having too much fun. I'm sorry.
No. I'm sorry. I'm gonna philosophize one more time. I think it's interesting because we have a very specific kind of trauma related to 9/11 that is very much about our identity.
I would highly, and I'm not just saying this because it's my show. Like, the therapist that I talked to, like, blew my mind. And she's like, you can, if you don't listen to anything else, listen to episode 7. Just listen to her interview because, like,
100% will.
It's mind blowing.
But what I think is interesting is that, like, not the main trauma, but the trauma of the entire country of people getting mass, like, dying, being murdered. I wasn't, like, fully able to process that at the same time. You know, like, it felt really strange when people would, like, assume that, like, my people were happy, you know, or like in quotes. So I just think it's really interesting because it's almost like we weren't allowed to mourn what everyone else was mourning. Because
Exactly.
And
that's what the psychiatrist, she said, you know, so she was also, we were basically, I think, the same age. She was like, you know, didn't know if I was allowed to go to my counselor to talk about the shit that, you know, in the way that the other people were. And all of a sudden, this, like my face or whatever, my identity, whatever it even was, like all of a sudden, that's the most important thing about me.
Yeah.
You know, like overnight.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's very true. God, imagine the timeline where 9/11 never happened. Who would we be?
Yeah.
Life would be, I would be so
9/11
fun.
Wouldn't have happened, but something else would have happened because we were deeply fucking the Middle East. It was coming.
It's
true. Hate to say it, but we had it coming. Like, a group of people who are continuously fucked over going to do, they're going to fucking attack you back eventually. They're going to find another way. It was inevitable, the pressure cooker we were building, literally, in the Middle East.
Yeah, it's definitely something that was just building and building tension. And then,
if it wasn't Osama bin Laden, it was going to be some other guy. You know, like, it's just kind of is what it is. You don't really fuck with people on that scale, on that level, and not expect some sort of, I mean, of course, they didn't. A lot of white people don't expect it because they're like, oh, what? Us? We're great. And you're like, ew, bitch.
Like, well, I go think to hell. There's a certain amount of privilege that, and again, like, obviously, I'm not, like, making an excuse for this, but when people are pushed to, like, the point of desperation, like, they have no other, in their head, like, means of getting justice or expressing what they want to express, that level of, like, desperation, I don't think people can really fathom that. You know what I mean? I don't think people can actually, like, and I'm not trying to sympathize with people that are fucking murderers or, like, whatever.
It's funny because, like, the fact that you even have to say that, like, I get it, you know, like, but that's what I'm talking about. Like, we have to constantly, like, assert that, like, oh, by the way, just so you know, like, I'm not, you know, that. Yeah. Like, I totally get what you mean. And it sucks that we still have to even throw in these little disclaimers, right, about, like, hey, or just the fact that there's two sides type shit, you know, it doesn't mean I'm like down with what happened. Like, that shouldn't
if I was
even
a white person philosophizing and having psychology about it, I'd be like a fucking intellectual academic. But
you know what it is? I think I realized this living, and I mean, I've been really fortunate to do a bunch of travel and stuff too. But it's kind of like, I think until then, and since then, maybe COVID, like here in this country, we have been very sort of privileged to, if we choose, take a very like backseat to, like, you know, we don't. The rest of the world shit doesn't impact like what we do until something like that happens, when it's like all of a sudden, like, yeah, okay, like, you know, wake the fuck up type shit.
It's a huge privilege.
I mean, it's like, I don't think we should have Sharia law, but if Sharia law got all you fucks vaccinated, then sure, I wouldn't really be that opposed. I keep saying this. It's like, y'all are also Sharia law. And it's like, well, you're not really acting like you don't deserve it, okay? So why don't you, like, fucking act like a human being, respect other people's lives, and go get yourself vaccinated and stop being such a fucking bitch about everything. And then, you know what? We won't bring Sharia law into your homes like you're so afraid of. Stupid, dude.
Can you imagine? That's actually really funny. If it was like part of Sharia law to like get vaccinated.
If Sharia law is like, you all have to get vaccinated, am I opposed? No.
Like, how can you say, like, no to that?
I'll take the hit, okay? Because Jesus Christ, the crazy things y'all are writing on the internet, it's genuinely insane. We've gotten to a point where I'm like, none of you can be trusted at this point.
That's why, I mean, like, this idea of getting back to normal is impossible in my brain, because you're not trying to convince, like, it's not like another lockdown won't help or whatever. We have to change the minds of like a millions of people in order to like actually get anywhere near normal, and changing people's minds that are just, it's an impossible task. Everyone's really stubborn and like indignant.
It's just different
and all
worlds.
Stuff.
You know, we don't live in the same. It's impossible.
It's impossible. But I'm glad that we turned it around and we didn't end on like a too much of a depressing note.
We solved everything. Solved everything. That's why, again, I'm on the top podcast here.
Oh my God. You have to stop that, because one, it's not true, but also
one, it's absolutely true. And you know what? Two, cut to me in jail for making that Sharia law comment. I'd be like, no, I swear I'm white. Oh, I wonder if that is like a real defense. I'd be like, am I not white passing enough? What do you want from me? I was just like a monster immediately. I am curious, like how I've never been in a situation where I would need to like flip for any, you know, reason.
What would that situation be?
What do you mean?
Like, I don't know. Like if I did get arrested and they're like, you know, like in most like situations where like they arrest a Muslim man and try and get him to admit he's
a
terrorist out of nowhere. You know, like the crap that like the surveillance FBI shit. And CIA do. Like,
got an episode about that too.
Yeah, like I don't know if someone was like, tell us who you now, like under extreme pressure.
You're saying you'd sell me out? Is that what you're saying?
No, I just like, maybe I would sell my brother out. I'd be like, fuck you.
Oh my God.
One last fuck you, you annoying bitch. You know, like
like, yo, I had this dude on my podcast who like lived in Pakistan for a year.
I would hope I wouldn't, but I just always like think about it. Like, would I become a fucking monster in the moment? Just like really let go of everything I've ever felt.
Point of desperation.
Yeah.
Like, right. You know?
Right.
One of the people we interviewed on our episode about surveillance was talking about how, you know, the guy that kind of sold him out, it was a kid who, like, you know, had a bunch of mental health issues and stuff, and he just got paid and he did it for the money. Oh, it was like in Queens, you know, like, so yeah. So point being, I think you'd probably do it for what, like 50 to 100 bucks?
Probably like 25.
All right.
Yeah. I do wonder.
Money order.
Because I'm like 30 cents. I got 25 cents. I need to do laundry, you know. I will say, when I was coming back from Iran, when the Muslim ban happened, I had to get back in the country while everything was like, you know, going to shit with border patrol.
Oh, wow.
I was literally coming up with a plan of like how if they're like, well, you were in Iran, I would like have a voice like, you know me, but I'm like super American. Like I was like trying to come up with a persona to be like, who me? No, I wouldn't. You know, like be like taking selfies in line. But like that's where my head went, where I was like, fuck, now I gotta act like I'm like really American, really patriotic, so they don't fuck with me.
Yeah,
it's like
pull out your
sad.
American flag pin, put on your jacket. Maybe we should just do that.
Yeah, I dyed my hair.
It was only two years ago that I finally stopped getting fucked with at the airport. So, yeah.
Oh, I still get. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's not about my race at this point. It's just like my life that I get fucked with.
My youngest sister was like, "Hey, I was fine until your fucking podcast came out. Then they pulled me over again. So fuck you for having me on."
Wait, really?
Yeah, she said this last, she took a trip recently and they like pulled her out and it hadn't happened to her in a few years. So as a joke, she was like, it was probably your goddamn podcast.
Yeah. Okay, good.
This has been an absolute joy to talk to you.
Thank you so much for having me. Really, really
appreciate it. Of course, I can't wait to know everything about you, listening to your show. Everyone, please go listen to King of the World.
As I'm sure both Anna and Shireen will be doing right after we hang up. They're going to kind of, you know, just for the rest of the next like 7 to 8 hours. Yeah.
Go to the bathroom first.
Okay.
No big deal.
You can use your headphones in there too.
I'll wait. I'm just joking. Yeah, I'll listen to it. I'll listen. I think I already listened to the first episode. Yeah, I listened to the first episode when Taz sent it, because at first I was like, who's this rascal?
Who the fuck is this man?
So I guess I'm not immediately like, yes, I do actually do a tad bit of research, so I don't go in like, and so you are?
No, not at all.
Who you
especially,
are?
Especially, no. I appreciate it. I really appreciate it. There's a lot of stuff out there.
I was like, what's your name, sir? Okay. All right.
What
come
are you
on
from
through.
Boston, dude? Yeah. What are you? You know Mark Wahlberg?
I will say when I was in Boston and I was taking a train to Rhode Island, it was like people would be like, all right. Who's next? And I was like, what the fuck? And I was like, oh my God, I'm in Boston.
Yeah, people really talk like that. Yeah.
I was like, this is not television.
It's endearing. It's endearing.
It was genuinely shocking, because I don't think I've ever been to Massachusetts and like hung out in Boston. So like I was genuinely like, oh my God, these people aren't just doing voices. I'm in Boston. And I'm in the way.
I should have just done that accent this whole time.
I would have loved it.
That would be a trip.
But then I would have started to do it.
Because then people would hopefully go listen to the show and be like, wait a minute. Huh? What's going on here?
Which one's the act?
Who's this Boston-ass Muslim? Okay, I gotta check this out.
A Boston-ass Muslim. Can I use that in a comedy thing?
It's a Boston-ass Muslim right there. I don't even know where he's from. What neighborhood are you from? You a Southie? I can't figure it out. Boston-ass Muslim.
Oh,
it's almost like a conundrum. You're
Boston-ass
like, I don't get it.
Muslim.
Yeah.
Yo, that is a t-shirt.
Put that on a t-shirt. I was going to say, yeah,
hell
exactly.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Where can people find you on the internet and keep up with you?
Absolutely. So please listen to this show of mine, King of the World. It is spelled King of the World. It's on all the things. And then you can go to my website, ShahJahanKhan.com, to see my giant headshot. And see the close trimming of my 5 o'clock shadow, and also learn about my band and various voiceover endeavors and such.
We didn't even touch on the voiceover stuff. There's just so much to talk about.
I was in a couple of rom-coms. I've done some audio books. I do some audio erotica from time to time. You know, pays the bills.
Oh, yeah.
So.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Did that?
You have a good voice, so it makes
Thank
sense.
You. Yeah. Thank you. And all the things at Shahjistan. Sorry, I made that a long time ago. I hope
perfect.
It's still...
Shahjistan. I will say everything will also be tagged in the description, so you have no excuse to hop on over.
Thank you.
Yes, appreciate no excuse.
It. I just want to say your glasses are amazing.
Thank you.
I'm a huge fan.
I have 100 pairs of glasses. I switched them out.
ZennyOptical.com?
No, I buy direct. Eyes buy direct. I have fucked with Zenny. Don't get me wrong. Okay. Look, I've been to every website. Right. Is Warby Parker overpriced? Yes.
100%, 100%.
But I will not accept a sponsorship, so feel free to reach out, everybody. I will sell out within a second. I also hate Muslims. Whatever you want. Whatever you want, I'll do it. I'm just joking. I'm sorry. Shout out to my mom, wonderful Muslim lady.
Yes.
Bless.
Amazing. Okay. Thank you both so much.
Of course. Thank you. You're going to have to come back and just tell us so much more about your life and stuff.
So you're both in L.A.?
Yeah, we're both in LA.
All right, I'll be there at some point in the next couple
months. Okay, we're having it on record now. It's recording. We have to meet up with you. We cannot flake.
Absolutely. And he will have watched Lady Parts. We are Lady Parts by then.
The entire series.
And if he hasn't, we will not be acknowledging him at all until he has. It's only 6 episodes. You have no excuse. It's a quick ride. And the next thing you know, you'll be like, damn, that was rocking. That's how you guys speak, you musicians. You go, hell yeah, that was rocking.
Yeah, it's anything that's in the context of guitar riffs and such. So, yeah. We only discuss things in terms of distortion levels.
We've been riffing this whole time.
I don't even know what that
we
means.
Have been riffing. You're absolutely right. We basically started a band.
Exactly. Okay, well... Before this gets too neurotic, I'm going to wrap us out of here. This is Shireen, and this is Ethnically Ambiguous. You can follow us on Instagram at Ethnically Ambig, AMBIG, and then Twitter, it's Ethnically Amb. I'm ShiroHero on Instagram and ShiroHero666 on Twitter.
And I'm at Anna Hosnie, what do you mean at? At Anna Hosnie on Twitter.
Yes.
Who's that adorable thing with you?
This is my angel muffin. Oh no, he's been blurred out. He's too young.
CIA.
This is Angel Muffin, not his real name. But if anyone is watching the new season of Curb, the Angel Muffin episode is unbelievably hilarious, and I really recommend it. It's all about a little white fluffy dog named Angel Muffin. I think it's so on point.
It's really cute
to name a dog Angel Muffin, just not even trying to hide how much you love him.
Yeah.
He's also a murderer.
Until next time, go listen to King of the World, please. Okay.
Bye.
Okay, bye.
Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.